And welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast. And I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith. And glad to be here. And thank you all for listening. We are a radio show on Red State Talk Radio, as well as a podcast. Our podcast is Throttle Up Radio, and it can be found almost, everywhere, I guess. We have been checking, and it's on iTunes, it's on Apple Play, it's on a number of other podcast platforms as well. And so it's really easy to get it. Also, it's on our website, throttleupradio.com. You can go to our website, throttleupradio.com, and we have the complete inventory of all podcasts that relate to this radio show. This radio show is Throttle Up Radio, and it is all about critical thinking, which is something that is in short supply right now. Hopefully, we are doing something about that. We are trying to encourage all of us out there, all of the listening audience as well as others, to start getting serious about critical thinking. It's time that we did so, okay? This is an antidote to lazy thinking. We don't want to be lazy thinkers. That's not a good idea in this time and place. This is a special edition. We are doing a series here of a number of, well, of course, we do a lot of special editions, don't we? And this is one. This series of radio shows and podcasts is called Think Like a Fighter Pilot. All right. Fighter pilots are not lazy thinkers, by the way. And in case you were wondering, fighter pilots think critically. Why is that? Well, basically because if they don't, they're not going to survive for very long. So critical thinking is essential for the fighter pilot community. I would go on to say, and this is kind of a radical idea, but that's okay because this show is not normal or conventional. I would say that critical thinking is necessary for the survival of all of us right now. If we cannot think critically, I think we are doomed, but hopefully it's not that hard to do. So we are going to be stressing that on an ongoing basis. All right, Think Like a Fighter Pilot. This show specifically is talking about the new book that we have just published. The name of the book, you probably have heard of it. If you haven't, you should. And so this show is about that. It's called The Sonic Warrior: Chronicles of a Top Gun Pioneer. And we're going to do a show on that particular aspect of what we are doing. And this is part of our attempts, efforts, plans to bring critical thinking into the mainstream of thought all across America. This is the whole purpose. No reason why we are doing this and the reason for our existence right now. We want it to be pervasive all across America. We want critical thinking to be the normal way in which we conduct ourselves, lead our lives, and respond to what is going on in the world and in this country today. Now, this is a little bit different format because we are going to be doing a Q&A. And so my audio engineer is going to be asking me questions. And I am going to respond to these questions. So this is a Q&A. This is more of an interview, I suppose. Interview of the author of The Sonic Warrior, as well as interviewing the host of Throttle Up Radio show and podcast. All right, so this is an interview. This is a Q&A. And I'm going to turn it over to my great audio engineer to ask me the first question. How many questions do we have prearranged here for this interview? We have five. She says we have five questions, and we're going to dive right into this thing. And she's going to ask me five questions. So this is the first question for this Q&A interview for this particular show.
Question number one, what is the Sonic Warrior book all about, and why did you have it published?
Okay, yes, great question. And, you know, we can cover a lot of ground here, so we will do our best. What is the Sonic Warrior book all about? Sonic Warrior book, in a nutshell, is exactly how do fighter pilots think and why we all should adopt this kind of mode, this process of thinking, which is unusual. It is not prototypical. It is not conventional. It is unconventional kinds of thinking, but it's necessary if we are going to survive in the environment in which fighter pilots live. Now, let me clarify that a little bit better, because, you know, we throw these terms around and it's not really clear, I suppose, to the typical listener what exactly we're talking about. So I try to be very clear and precise in my language and my description. All right. So the world is dealing with a lot of things. One of them, and it is an important part of our existence right now, is aviation. Okay, flying airplanes and aviation with respect to military operations, although I will talk at great length dealing with the commercial side of aviation. But this discussion is going to be looking at aviation from a military perspective, military aviation, and what exactly is going on. Fighter pilots have been part of military aviation for a long time, since the very beginning, basically. All right, I'm going to start about where World War I occurred and move forward. At some point in time, in that time horizon, from that point, we're going to say 1916-ish to the present time, at some point, fighter pilots began to fly supersonically. Okay, that beginning of supersonic flight brought into the realm of military operations and brought into the warfighting community a type of warrior that we call a Sonic Warrior. Sonic Warrior is, in fact, a fighter pilot that operates airplanes that can travel at or faster than the speed of sound. Basically what that means is this. It means we're dealing with high-velocity aerial combat. And these high velocities are really at the extreme level or at the hyper level. Okay, we could use the word hyper velocities. That's used to denote other kinds of things in terms of missile technology and what have you. But we're talking about very high velocities or hyper velocities. All right, so we're dealing with the ability, the capability to perform combat operations at these hyper velocities. Now that requires a lot of skill, a lot of experience, and fighter pilots have to bring to the table. A whole host of skills that are necessary in order to succeed in combat when we were dealing with sonic warfare, right? So what is sonic warfare? Sonic warfare is what a sonic warrior does. Sonic warfare is air combat or aerial combat operations at very high velocities that are at or even above the speed of sound. Okay, why is that important? Well, at some point in time in aviation, you know, the airplanes encountered, this is at the beginning of the jet era, although not exactly, because this was a little bit before that time. But the beginning of the jet era, this is sometime in the mid-1950s, aircraft could go to a certain speed and then stop. And at that point is called the sound barrier. Right? It was actually a barrier. It was a place in the operational envelope in which the aircraft could not go any faster because it was experiencing the phenomena that occurs in the atmosphere when you are approaching very close to or at the speed of sound. When you are traveling at these very high velocities and approach or get at the speed of sound, certain things happen to the airflow. The airflow becomes turbulent. There is a considerable drag rise and all other kinds of things that happen. Compressibility effects. I mean, we could really get technical here, but that's not important. All right. What it is that is the airplanes were not actually capable of going any faster. We eventually solved that problem. That problem was solved in 1947 by Chuck Yeager, who was the first human to break the sound barrier or to go travel faster than the speed of sound. All right. So then we were able to take that and through the genius of American aviation, a lot of very, very innovative people were working on this, and they came up with aircraft, and we typically refer to these aircraft as fighter type of aircraft, although they weren't just fighter type of aircraft. There were some supersonic bombers that were created and produced back then as well, but normally, it's fighter aircraft, these small, lightweight airplanes that could easily travel faster than the speed of sound. Once you got to that point, once you got to the point where you actually could travel at or faster than the speed of sound on a regular basis, then we began to engage ourselves in aerial combat at these very high velocities. That is where the sonic warrior began to work in the combat arena. That's where the sonic warrior was first, was first created or first became a reality, right? All right, so the sonic warrior was that that individual trained in sonic warfare. So it was a category of warfare. It also depicted a type of warrior. A type of warrior is that aviator that can conduct, is capable, trained to conduct aerial combat at supersonic speeds. Okay, that's the whole beginning. Now, why did I write the book? Is that what you asked me? What is the Sonic Warrior book? And why did you have it published? That was the question. All right. So why did I write the book? I wrote the book because this is not all that well known. So I am adding to the knowledge base. And why do I want to add to the knowledge base? I'm adding it to the knowledge base because this is the proper time for us to recognize that. This knowledge base that was developed in order for warriors to become sonic warriors, this kind of thinking, this kind of knowledge, this kind of reasoning is more important today than it ever has been in the course of human events. Now, it sounds like I'm overstating it, but I am not. Okay, we have got to go find the place where we can employ these powerful thinking and reasoning skills in our lives today, because we need to do that in this country and in this world. All right, so it is important for us to understand this part of history, aviation history. It's important for us to understand how is it that humans can actually operate in this environment and be successful. What are the attributes? What are the skills? What does it take for humans to succeed in this environment? And does this have an application in other domains as well? Okay, that is the big, big question. And we are attempting to provide some insight into or answer some of these profound questions in this time and place. That is the reason why we're doing it. That's the reason why the Sonic Warrior is now in publication and can be found anywhere. It doesn't matter. You can go any place, any bookstore, any book selling platform, anywhere in the country. It's distributed internationally by Ingram, and so you can find the Sonic Warrior anywhere. It's really, really easy to find the book, ebook, and audio book. Okay, it's important because right now we have got to go to a place. We got to find that area within the universe of reality. We've got to find that place where we can go and learn how to think. The key to all of this, and this goes back to critical thinking 101. The key to all of this is not what to think, but how to think. If we can look at those individuals who were amazingly successful in a hostile environment, in a hostile world, where things were, little was known about this particular aspect of reality. If we can go there and figure out how did these Sonic Warriors think, that is going to give us a great deal of insight into how we should think today, because we are actually experiencing or living in the same kind of environment. We are living in a hostile world. We are living in a environment in which information warfare is something that we confront on a daily basis. We're living in an environment that's highly complex and highly uncertain. Similar kinds of things face the Sonic Warrior. Very, very similar things the Sonic Warrior faced. The original cadre of Sonic Warriors, which I am part of, okay, we were placed in this environment, and we had to figure out what is the best way for us to proceed and to achieve mission success. So we came up with a whole bunch of new ideas of how to think. That's what we did. And that's what the Sonic Warrior book is all about. It's about how did we do this, not what we did, but how is it that we were able to do this and we were able to do it successfully. We were able to achieve mission success. How did we do that with respect to thinking, critical thinking, complex problem solving, and stuff like that? One of the things that we point out in the book, The Sonic Warrior, we do talk briefly. This is not a technical manual, okay? So this is for the prototypical reader. This is for the average reader. This is for those who are interested not only in aviation, but interested in problem solving, particularly complex problem solving. This book is great for those kinds of people. And those kinds of people, they're all over the place, all right? So this is the perfect book for that group of people. And those that want to learn a little bit more about the application of critical thinking. We talk about critical thinking not from a theoretical standpoint, but we talk about critical thinking from a user standpoint. How do you actually use it? The application side of it. How do you apply these kinds of ways of thinking? How do you apply critical thinking in this particular situation or this particular environment? If you want to know a very quick place to go, if you're interested in it or have some further intellectual curiosity about it, you can also access my recently published article. The name of the article is Decision Making in Complex Environments, right? So you can go there. Where can you find it? Well, you can go to my other publisher, IGI Global. That's igiglobal.com. You can go there. You can actually go find it in all kinds of places. But you can go to my publisher and you can find it easy enough. And it's a journal. It's an award-winning journal article. And so you can go there and read it. And that begins the journey, the intellectual journey into this world of the Sonic Warrior, right? So you start there. You say, okay, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense. So how did we use that to solve the aerial combat problem? How did we use those kinds of thinking skills, that kind of thinking? Now, remember, now keep in mind the words I'm using. I'm using the words how and why. I am not using the words what. Okay, that's important. That's critical to our understanding of this. Talking to my audio engineer, so you know I'm using the words how and why. You know, and that's the whole point. That's the big picture view of the Sonic Warrior Chronicles of a Top Gun Pioneer. There are two key things to remember about, or to recognize, rather, about the title. Okay, one is Sonic Warrior, and the other one is Top Gun. Those two things more or less converged in the course of human events, in the course of aviation events. Sonic warfare and the Top Gun initiative were closely aligned. They converged roughly about the same time in history and the same time in aviation history. So there was a convergence, and it was a convergence that was not a coincidence. Of course, I don't believe in coincidences. Do you? I don't believe in them. Right? I think there's a. I think the convergence was important for us to understand, and because one supported the other. All right, let's go to the second question that you have for me.
Okay. Question number two. How does this book relate to your other works?
Okay, good question. Now, we touched about on that previously, earlier in my talk today, but it all relates to this whole process of how to think critically. How to think critically when you are involved in a high-stakes operation, right? So the major point that I want to get across, okay, is contained in two phrases. The first phrase is high-stakes operations, and it could be anything in which mission success is very, very important, and yet what you're trying to do is difficult and dangerous. Okay, high-stakes operations, we often do that. Those are often related to something that is necessary at the national level. Okay, and with respect to high-stakes operations, what kinds of critical thinking is necessary for us to achieve mission success when we are conducting high-stakes operations? And let me give you a good example of that, which is presented in the book The Logic of Failure by Dietrich Dorner. Right? He said that fundamentally, those who think this way, and I'm going to quote him, those who think about the formless collection of data surrounding random events, those people are doomed to failure. What is it? That's a particular kind of thinking that flies in the face of critical thinking. All right, so if you have a tendency to look at the world in terms of a formless collection of data surrounding random events, then there is an urgent need for you to change the way that you think and to embrace critical thinking. If the Sonic Warrior embraces the application of critical thinking, which it does, and I might add a little bit more to that, embraces the application of critical thinking in complex problem solving. If it does, then it relates directly to the Throttle Up radio show and podcast. So the two work together. You can say that the Throttle Up radio show and podcast is the mouthpiece or the bullhorn or whatever, or the way that we transmit this across the world. And that's happening as we speak, not only through the radio show, our radio show on Red State Talk Radio, but also as a podcast, and it's available on a growing list of podcast platforms, we're delighted to say. And so those two are made for one another. Okay, how did I do with that question? Answer, was it good? Okay, next question.
Okay, question number three. Is sonic warfare a new form of combat?
Yes, absolutely it is. Sonic warfare is, in fact, a new form of combat. It is aerial combat at supersonic speeds. That is a new form. That is a new place in which humans have not occupied before. And so, as an early sonic warrior, I was entering this arena that was brand new to human activities. It was brand new environment, completely new. There was very little known about this environment. Okay, so sonic warfare is in fact our newest form of combat, although I do think that there will soon be manned combat space vehicles. I do think that's going to happen. You know, I think the Star Wars thing is not all fiction. I think that's going to happen. But right now, sonic warfare is our newest form of combat, and our sonic warriors are our newest set of warriors, or the newest warrior class. Okay? How'd that go? All right, next question.
Question number four. How do sonic warriors think and perform when everything is changing so rapidly and complexity and uncertainty prevail?
Okay, sonic warriors look at, first of all, they employ different kinds of thinking and reasoning. What is that? The sonic warriors the first order of business that for any sonic warrior, and this is crucial, if this is not done, then you're not going to be successful. The first order of business is being able to predict a future situation from a set of current events. So you have to get out in front of the problem. You have to get out in front of what is going on in the here and now. That's key. That is how it is done. Now, does that employ critical thinking? Yes, it does, but it also embraces a number of other things as well. The first order of business, being able to think critically. The second, which goes hand in glove with that, is higher order reasoning. Problems cannot be solved at this level of velocity, at this speed, at this high velocity or hypervelocity. Problems cannot be solved at the literal level. Okay? They can only be solved, you can only deal with reality at the abstract level. Higher order reasoning is crucial here. If you don't know how to employ higher order reasoning, you need to find out. Okay, and we will. It's also in the book, The Sonic Warrior. That's our latest book. It's also in our previous book, which is called Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. They both work together. All right, critical thinking that is further amplified by higher order reasoning, or the ability to consider things at a higher level of abstraction. So we have higher order reasoning coupled with this ability to predict a future situation from a set of current events. So prediction, higher order reasoning, and critical thinking. Those three things converge, come together, and they produce powerful capability in terms of thinking and reasoning and performing high stakes operations. This is the power. This is the power of human reasoning, the power of human thought. It is beyond belief how powerful it can be. It is it's so powerful that there is probably nothing it can't do in terms of complex problem solving. Okay, I think we have time for one more question, right?
Question number five. What can we learn from the sonic warfare community?
Well, we can learn quite a bit. The first thing that we can learn is the willingness not to give up. Okay, when we are confronted with the unknown, when we are confronted with a brand new environment, when we are confronted with situations that are seemingly impossible to deal with, we still don't give up. Okay, we're not going to give up. We're not going to stop. We're going to continue because we have an important mission. The Sonic warfare community recognizes a couple of key things right up front. What we are trying to do is important. It is important for this nation. It is important for the people that live in this nation. It's part of our national defense thinking. It's part of protecting the Constitution against all enemies. It's part of that. So our mission is profoundly important, and yet we are engaged in, we are encountering a situation that is fraught with uncertainty, high levels of danger, extremely complex, and for the early Sonic Warriors, humans had never been in this environment before, and so there was almost nothing that was known about it. And that's what can we learn? All right, so we can learn the fundamental lesson here is we don't give up when things become hard. We don't give up. Okay, there is a way. We may not know exactly what it is, but we have confidence and the intellectual courage to keep on with our mission. We're not going to stop because our mission is very, very important for our loved ones and for this country. And so that's what we're going to take away from this, is that we are going to be courageous in our pursuits of our goals. We're going to be courageous because we are doing the right things. That's what we're doing with. Okay, so we want to play this Jordan Peterson clip to finish out this show. And what is the name of it? Talking to my audio engineer. The importance of pursuing your goals. This relates to what we're talking about in terms of what the Sonic Warrior is and what the Sonic Warrior does, the kinds of missions that the Sonic Warrior performs. All right, so let's listen to another great piece from Jordan Peterson. You can find this on his website as well.
We know enough about psychology now to know that almost all of the positive emotion that you're going to experience in your life, and positive emotion is analgesic, by the way, right? It actually quells pain, so it's not just positive. It also gets rid of negative, which is a big plus. Almost all the positive emotion that you're going to feel in relationship to a goal, because you feel positive emotion as you approach a goal. And so if you want to feel positive emotion, then you need a goal. And then you might think, well, if you want to maximize that positive emotion, which is enthusiasm and also what pulls you out into the world, as well as feeling good, then you need the best possible goal. Well, because that's going to engage the largest segments of your being. Like if your goal's too narrow, then a bunch of you isn't going to be on board for it, you know? If the goal is well-developed and multifaceted, then all of you can partake in that. Even your negative elements, even your anger and your fear can get on board with that, let's say. So you need a goal, man, that's worthy. You got to think. You need a goal that justifies the tragedy and malevolence of life. That seems to be the bottom line. Now, maybe you think, well, there's no goal that can do that. It's like, well, there are still better and worse goals. So, and I'm not convinced that there are no goals that can do that. I think that's an open question. You'd never know that until you pursued the proper goal long enough to find out who you would be as a consequence of pursuing it. So that's also your destiny or your existential voyage, right? It's also not something that anyone else can do for you. Someone can say, get your act together for Christ's sake and get at it. That'll make the world unfold best for you, but there's no way you can know that without doing it. So, and unless you think you've done a particularly stellar job of that, then you have no reason to doubt its potential validity. So plus, like, crickets are telling you this, and so, you know, they're a very reliable source. Okay, so you see the star recurs as a motif in Pinocchio, and one of the more interesting elements of it here is that when Geppetto wants to transform his puppet, the marionette, who's being played by forces that operate behind the scenes, which is a really good definition of the persona from a Jungian perspective, right? And also something indicative of something like an ideological or conceptual possession. Geppetto, who's a good guy, is a positive father figure, lifts his, even though he's a patriarchal figure, right, and a very competent one, he still even lifts his eyes up to something that transcends his mode of being, positive as it is, and wishes that his creation would undertake the kind of transformation that would make it autonomous and fully functional as a moral agent. No strings, right? So that's very interesting, I think. Solzhenitsyn said, "The salvation of mankind lies only in making everything the concern of all." That's a pretty decent star-like goal, I would say. And so what happens in the Pinocchio story is that because, and I think this is a symbolic representative of what I just described to you that happens at a genetic level if you put yourself in new situations. So Geppetto is roughly culture in the Pinocchio story, right? He's a craftsman. And he makes Pinocchio. So he's who's his son? He's the socializing agent. And he aims for something above mere socialization, which is, I think, part of the mysterious element of human beings. You know, in our scientific models, we basically have socialization and biology. But there's always a third element in mythological stories, which is whatever you might construe as the spontaneous action of consciousness that's associated with free will. And, you know, that's just basically being conceptualized in religious terms as something akin to the soul. Now, we don't have a category for that scientifically, because what we try to do scientifically is to reduce everything either to socialization or to biology. But it isn't clear to me that it's perfectly reasonable from the perspective of practicality at a scientific level. You don't want to multiply explanatory principles beyond necessity. But there's many things that doesn't come to terms with, such as the fact that we all treat each other as autonomous beings with free will, and that seems to work, and that if we stop doing that, then things go to hell very, very rapidly. So, and the mere fact that we have been able to conceptualize what that conscious free will might be, metaphysically or physically, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means that we don't understand it. I mean, what, it was only in the last 15 years that we discovered that 95% of the universe was made out of some kind of matter that we can't even, whose properties we can't even imagine, except that it seems to have mass. So, anyways, what happens is when Geppetto lifts his eyes up to the star, so it's society aligning itself with the proper goal with regards to individual development, right? So instead of society being at odds with the individual, they line up. And then what happens is nature comes on board, and that's the blue fairy in the Pinocchio story, and that seems to me to be a symbolic representation of what happens biologically when you set the goal properly, get your culture behind you and move into the world, is that there's a biological transformation that occurs as a consequence of that, which means that a bunch of you that hasn't been turned on turns on. And I guess one question would be is, what would you be like if you turned on everything inside of you that could be turned on? Well, that's a good goal. That's a good thing to find out. So, now, I'm going to introduce a couple of other ideas. So, there's this idea in Jungian psychology called the circumambulation. And Jung had this idea that you had a potential future self, which would be, in potential, everything that you could be. And that it manifests itself moment to moment in your present life by making you interested in things. And the things that you're interested in are the things that would guide you along the path that would lead you to maximal development. Now, it sounds like a metaphysical idea or a mystical idea even, but it's not. It's not. It's a really profoundly biological idea. The idea is something like, well, you're set up so that you're automatically interested in those things that would fully expand you as a well-adapted creature. Well, like, there's nothing radical about that idea. How else? What else could possibly be the case, unless there's something fundamentally flawed about you? That is what the situation would be. It's kind of interesting to think about how that would be manifest moment to moment, but the idea is something like, well, your interest is captured by those things that lead you down the path of development. Well, that better be the case. Okay, so that's fine. And so there's some utility in pursuing those things that you're interested in. That's the call to adventure, let's say. So, and the call to adventure takes you all sorts of places. Now, the problem with the call to adventure is, like, what the hell do you know? You might be interested in things that are kind of warped and bent. And often it's the case that when new parts of people manifest themselves and grip their interest, say, they do it very badly and shoddily. And so you stumble around like an idiot when you try to do something new. That's why the fool is the precursor to the savior from the symbolic perspectives, because you have to be a fool before you can be a master. And if you're not willing to be a fool, then you can't be a master. So you're going to, it's an error, error-ridden process. And that's also laid out in the Old Testament stories, because the first thing that happens to all these patriarchal figures when God kicks them out of their father's house when they're like 84 is that they run into all sorts of trouble, and some of it's social and some of it's natural and some of it's a consequence of their own moral inadequacy. So they're fools. But the thing that's so interesting is that despite the fact that they're fools, they're still supposed to go on the adventure, and that they're capable of learning enough as a consequence of moving forward on the adventure so that they straighten themselves out across time. And so it's something like this. So this circumambulation that Jung talked about was this continual, we'll return to this continual circling in some sense of who you could be. You might notice, for example, that there are themes in your life. You know, when you go back across your experiences, you see you kind of have your typical experience that sort of repeats itself. And there might be variation on it, like a musical theme, but it's like you're circling yourself and getting closer to yourself as you move across time. That's the circumambulation. Now, you remember that for a sec, because we'll go back to it. Okay, so imagine that something glimmers before you. It's an interest that's dawning, and you decide, well, first of all, you're paralyzed. You think, well, how do I know if I should pursue that? It's probably a stupid idea. And the proper response to that is, you're right, it probably is a stupid idea, because almost all ideas are stupid. And so the probability that as you move forward on your adventure that you're going to get it right the first time is zero. It's just not going to happen. And so then you might think, well, maybe I'll just wait around until I get the right idea, and which people do, right? So they're like 40-year-old, 13-year-olds, which is not a good idea. And so they wait around until it's waiting for Godot, until they finally got it right. But the problem is you're too stupid to know when you've got it right. So waiting around isn't going to help, because even if the perfect opportunity manifested itself to you in your incomplete form, the probability that you would recognize it as the perfect opportunity is zero. You might even think it's the worst possible idea that you've ever heard of anywhere. Highly likely. Highly likely. So you have, there's, Nietzsche called that a will to stupidity, which I really liked. So, because he thought of stupidity as being it, you know, it's, you have to take it into account fundamentally and work with it. And so you can take these tentative steps on your pathway to destiny, and you can assume that you're going to do it badly. And that's really useful, because you don't have to beat yourself up. It's pretty easy to do it badly. But the thing is, it's way better to do it badly than not to do it at all. And that's the continual message that echoes through these historical stories in Genesis. It's like, these are flawed people. They should have got the hell out of their house way before they did. And they go out and they stumble around in tyranny and famine and self-betrayal and violence. But it's a hell of a lot better than just rotting away at home.
Okay, so the, you know, that was good. And the point here is, the point we're trying to make in, you know, in our discussions in the, on this show is, okay, we're dealing with doing something. These are human activities. And so we're looking at how do humans perform? How should we perform? If we are engaged or soon to be engaged in high stakes operation. What are the things that we need to bring to the table? What are the things that we need to bring to the problem space that involves thinking, our ability to think, our ability to reason? Is it just we just come ill-equipped into this arena? The answer is no. Okay, and this is what the Sonic Warrior book is trying to explain, the points it's trying to put across. It's trying to encourage all of us, also trying to inspire, because it is laid out in story form. So it is trying to inspire as well as entertain, inspire us to consider how we should think when we go into this situation, when we go into this problem space, when we go into this battlefield, when we are engaged in high velocity aerial combat. It could be not just that, but certainly that. How should we think? Not what to think. How should we think? And that's the key to mission success. Once we get the how right, then we are on our way to mission success. We are on our way to achieving our goals, to achieving our mission objectives. Let's be clear about what our mission objectives are, by the way. Let's be clear. Let's be a bit disciplined about that. But we are on our way to success. We can achieve things that are seemingly unachievable if we approach it in the right way. That's the key here to mission success. All right. So I guess we're getting to the point. Are we? Yes, we are. This is another Throttle Up Radio Show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week.